Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar. This is your points on the board. And I am here with my cohort, Mr. Eddie Aparicio, El Matador de El Salvador. Man, I love saying that, Eddie. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing, Guillermo? I'm all good, man. I just recovered from COVID, my second time getting it last week, man. And it wasn't that bad. It was just like a regular flu. So, you know, I'm not going to call it a COVID thing anymore. I'm just going to call it a flu because that's what it is now. So,
Did you take the vaccine? Are you vaccinated?
I did, but I did it so long ago. I haven't done any boosting. I just did the first and the second one, and I didn't want to do any more, honestly. I didn't even want to do it the first one.
I don't blame you. And some people were forced because of the job. It's like I tell people, look, I get it. I get it. You know, you have a family to support. You have kids to support. We're not in a revolutionary era like we were back then. And the reason I say that is when the Revolutionary War started, only 10% of colonists supported it. At its height, at its peak, America, only 45% of colonists supported the Revolutionary War. Revolutions are always a minority-produced results-driven. It's always the lesser people. So it's human nature to fall in line. And that's what I think this whole COVID thing. I'm a logical guy, and we'll get off the subject. This is not a political show, but I'm just a logical guy, Eddie. I'm a numbers guy. I'm a data guy. Yep. And I could not get over the hump of 99.9% recovery rate.
Yeah.
With seniors, 99.7. And I was getting infuriated because I'm like, this is a scheme. This is a con.
There's an agenda on this thing, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah. And then people, conspiracy, you're a conspiracist. And I'm like, no, I'm not. 99%, you know. And I just could not wrap my head around it. And since I work for myself, my wife does too, we did not get vaccinated. And I never looked down on the vaccine. I never did.
Good for you. Good for you, man.
I push back now because I remind them, you wanted me dead. You wanted me in quarantine camps. You wanted everything in public taken away from me. There were organ donors there were people who needed organs who were denied, Eddie, because they weren't vaccinated. Those are the people I loathe. That's crazy. Yeah, I feel for the everyday American who was forced to get it so they could put food on the table. You know, I get angry at it. Maybe it's because of my upbringing, watching two dictators in action, having relatives where I'm told to shut up because they don't know who's listening, and they don't need a little American visiting his family to say the wrong thing, and then my cousin gets hauled away. So maybe that's why I'm a little sensitive to that, but good for you in the sense of
You know what's interesting, though, too, Guillermo? I mean, this is the last thing I'll bring up on this talk because we have a big show. We want to talk about other things other than just this. But what's interesting is that, you know, you don't hear anything about the media, any coverage on people just dropping dead, you know, for no reason. And a lot of it, they're attributing it, at least some of the initial studies, to these vaccines, man. There's issues going on in your body that this thing's creating. And there's people just dying of, you know, heart issues, you know, especially the young, and the media is not covering it, which is unusual. I mean, that's like what that tells me that right there is an agenda, right? So anyway,
I'm glad you said it like you did, because you said it's unusual and you stopped. You didn't finish. It's unusual because it's not unusual. In the 90s is when I slowly, because of Noriega and Panama, I was heavy into politics. I was heavy into the machine of the political machine. And he who controls the media controls the country. That's what it boils down to. Universal. Did you know, the last point, and then we're moving on, that back in the Roman eras, all the way back to the 1700s, after we became a country, they had what you call town criers. In Rome, it was called something else. But remember, there was no telephone, no telegraph, no radio, you know, no television. So they would hire these people who would just be at the corners screaming, Thomas Jefferson, sleeps with us, sleeps with us. You know, everything that they would. I've researched this. Some of the things they said, you're like, oh, dear God. So because when people are like, politics has never been this bad, I'm like, then you don't know history. It's always been this bad. Maligning your opponent. Yeah. So this is nothing new. I just get angry because this is the greatest country in the world, Eddie. It's exceptional. And if America falls, the world will eventually fall. Because we are the only, we are bad people at times, our government. But overall, we are the only good white hat cowboys that can actually beat up a bad cowboy. You know, there's no other. I'm serious. France asked us when we were fighting, when we invaded Libya, hey, man, we ran out of bombs. Can you give us a hand? You know, the Brits, the last time they won a war, who knows? You know, I mean, they beat up all the sheep on that down in Argentina when Margaret Thatcher did, you know, hell. We did the same thing. We beat up Grenada, you know? Anyway, let's get going, brother. We got a great show for you guys tonight. We're going to talk about the return of one of the players on Eddie's favorite team, Draymond Green. And, you know, it's funny. I don't dislike Draymond Green. I'm like, boy needs some help, you know? We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about the something that Eddie's brought up a few times that isn't making big news. It's not big news, but it's an important part of basketball in the revenue generating machine. And it's the player participation policy. It's a new rule. Eddie's going to remind us what it is. And a team was finally fined for it. And fine, Eddie, what did you say? For the oddest reason, because they weren't even superstar players. And from there, we're going to talk to NBA trade deadline. It's approaching on February 8th. I sent Eddie a list of a bunch of players. He's going to let us know who he thinks will be taken out of that group. And we're going to talk about this every week, Eddie. I assume that was an understanding when you brought it up until it happens. Because I'm pretty sure between now and next week, there could be a few trades. Then the following week.
It's always there's one tonight that's on the books right now. It's about to happen.
There you go. And we're going to close the show out with the National Football League and Wild Card Weekend. Boy, I think there were only two teams, Eddie, that weren't considered upsets this week. You know, everybody else were. And this is what happens every year. People forget. We get blowouts in the first weekend since they had the extra team in there now. Remember how I talk about greatness and we've had words, good and bad, about it, you know, where you disagree or don't agree. But this is what I mean by greatness. When you make a mistake in the regular season, I'm like, yeah, okay, you can survive playing against the Atlanta Falcons with that mistake. You can't in the playoffs. And that's why we saw certain teams get rolled. And that's what I mean by greatness. It's kind of like the LeBron Curry, you know, it's just a fine line, and people struggle to differentiate it. I asked my cousin, do you know who Steph Curry is? She's Panamanian. No. I go, do you know who LeBron is? Oh yeah, I know who LeBron is. You know Michael Jordan? Yeah, I know Michael Jordan. And so I'm like, I'm gonna go to the Eddie about that. But it's not that Steph Curry isn't a superstar. It's transcending the game. No, and you're right. It's not even a sample size. I mean, that wouldn't fly. That's anecdotal. But one of my goals with Grumbly's Media is to have a man on the street. I've loved that since Carson. I know Jay Leno did it. You know, they go out on the street. They just ask the questions. Oh, dude. It's fun.
Guillermo. Guillermo with Jimmy Fallon. The guy's freaking hilarious. You ever watch that guy? He just interviews a bunch of guys. That, you're talking about someone like that, right?
I haven't watched Late Night in years. But yeah, well, yeah. And then you get shocked. You get shocked at some of the answers. Like, dude, man, this is America. Where'd you go to school? In a dungeon? You know? The worst ones are when they show a picture of the vice president. Nobody ever gets it, yeah. But I bet you if they show three butts and one of them was Kim Kardashian's, that's Kim's right there, buddy. They know that. So let's get to it. All righty. Our first topic on tap is Draymond Green returns from a 12-game suspension. Eddie, before we get into the timeline, I'd like for you to talk about the timeline, but your first take. It was approximately a month suspension. That's about 14% of the league games. I mean, he's been suspended for 14% of the season in terms of the games played. Do you think that suspension was long enough?
You know what? I mean, I think that the NBA didn't want to put a timeline on it because they wanted to show at least the perception or the impression that they care about the individual, and they didn't want to make it look like it was a penalty. So I think, you know, it's pretty apparent that Draymond Green has some anger issues. It's pretty evident. It's been a timeline, quite some time of a lot of his infractions. And it started, you know, a lot of NBA, a lot of Warrior fans, you know, since as beloved as Draymond Green is, there's a lot of, you know what, we could have had another championship if it wasn't for him, you know. He's definitely been a detriment to the team, but he's also been like, you know, a godsend to the team. I mean, the guy is essentially he's the heartbeat of the team. So he essentially makes the team work. Steph Curry's one of these quiet leaders. He leads by example, really isn't vocal. You know, Draymond Green brings a sense of toughness to the team. You know, he brings the leadership. You know, he's a strong personality. He's the toughness of the team. And without him, they have a hard time, you know, playing as a team, as what we know as the Golden State Warriors. So he's as vital as he is, he's also a detriment because of his conduct, right? And that's what, you know, the NBA, you know, started seeing this. And I'm glad they did it the way they did it, because it makes it look like it's not a penalty. It's more of we're here to try and help the individual. So, you know, is 12 games enough? You know, it depends. It depends on what they're trying to get out of it right now, right? I think, you know, you're not going to get, you know, somebody changing their behavior completely, you know, in therapy in 12 sessions or whatever, how many times they did these sessions over the course of that month or month period that they had, a little bit more than a month. So, you know, but they're going to get tools. You know, people who are in therapy will tell you that, you know, you get tools to help, you know, go through your journey to overcome whatever it is that you're overcoming. And it starts, you know, from day one, and you're never going to get there until probably the end of the year, you know, until the end of your life, realistically, but you're going to get better in time. Right. That's what these guys, you know, I think that's what happened. It's just they gave them some tools, and, you know, I saw it in action too, actually. There was opportunities yesterday in yesterday's game against Memphis Grizzlies where, you know, he could have easily gotten pissed off, which he has done in the past, and he actually swallowed it. And I saw it multiple times. So obviously something worked. We shall see if it continues, right? But that's what we're hoping, is that that he's actually gotten something out of this so that he can apply it moving forward, so he doesn't get in trouble with refs, and doesn't get in trouble with doing any of these antics that he's done in the recent history with Rudy Gobert and then Yusuf Nurkic of the Suns, right? So that's what we're hoping that doesn't happen.
You know, it's my take is simple on this. Well, real quick for the audience out there, what Eddie's referring to, and I didn't realize it until I did my research, because after the Shaq traveling cross country against the Portland Trailblazers for two straight years in the game sevens, I gave up on basketball. So when I was researching this, I did not realize that. What Eddie was referring to cost him a championship. He's talking about the Cleveland series, and that was his first big issue where he got suspended for the next game, and they needed him. To another point Eddie brings up indirectly is Steph Curry's the team. Can they replace Steph Curry? No. No. I'm talking about, could they replace Steph Curry? No, you can't replace. I mean, eventually another generational player will come around, but the odds are, you know – Yeah, but can you replace a Draymond Green? Yes. But to Eddie's point, he was a glue of that team. We as fans, not me and you, but this is what irks me about the average fan. Steph Curry, oh, you don't need Draymond Green. No, Draymond Green plays a very important role. It's like Dennis Rodman did in Chicago, or Bill Laimbeer did in Detroit, or Kevin McHale did for Larry Bird. That's a bad example. But, you know, the players who don't get on.
Yeah.
So as far as Draymond Green, you know, the tools are only good if the individual truly wants to be helped. And when you are forced to get help, like you have to go do this, or you're going to be this suspended for this or that, meaning it's not the person who's decided I need help. I don't see the tools helping them long term, because they were forced to do this. But I'm not saying I'm right. That's just my thought. It's as I told Eddie off screen, I said, I don't care what he does this week, next week, or even the first month. I want to see how he's reacting 4 months, because early on you're going to be on best behavior, you know. So, and my final take on this is, I have no love for or hate for my fellow man, but I do want to see everybody be a good citizen, live a great, content life, live the exceptional American dream. And my concern for Draymond Green is, who's the other violent guy from the '90s? I forget. Choke Pete
Rasheed. Oh, you're talking about Latrell Sprewell. Another
Latrell Sprewell. That was Golden State. Sacramento, Golden State. He's flat broke now. Flat broke. Never learned. Always did it. He didn't realize they're trying to help me. But I'd rather be a thug. That's what it boiled down to. So my whole hope for Draymond Green is he gets the help he needs. Because if not, I know this for a fact. I've talked to at least a dozen agents. Not a lot, but in my business, I didn't care. Somebody else handled the agent talk. But I became friends with an agent. And he told me, he goes, look, these players, they don't understand. You know, most players don't realize when they're that young, the money will stop. It's not infinite, but they act as if it is. So that's my concern for him. You know, his brutish behavior goes to a bar. Next thing you know, it's jail time and a $10 million payout, $15 million here.
And the thing is, Guillermo, but here's the bottom line here is that, you know, it got to a point, and I think this is the other message that the NBA sent to him as well as the Golden State Warriors, is like, look, this guy is getting very close to getting thrown out of this league, right? This was a drastic measure. This has never happened before. You've never seen a league put an indefinite suspension over something like this, which is not this. Again, they didn't try to make it a penalizing event. They tried to make it like, hey, we're trying to help this kid. He needs all the help he can get. We're going to make it indefinite because no timetable for him to get that help that he needs, right? But the thing is, this guy is very, very close to getting kicked out of the NBA. So he's going to be he's going to mind his P's and Q's now, in my opinion, in the short term, you know, and we'll see, like you said, in the next 4 months where he's at, right? But the other thing that's also on the line is that he has a job after the NBA, and he's already got a contract with TNT. You know, he's going to essentially be the replacement to one of those guys, you know, whether it be Shaq, you know, Charles Barkley or Kenny the Jet, or maybe just an addition to that team. He's got a contract with them, and he will lose out on that if he doesn't shape up. So I think, you know, I think he's going to, like I said, the signs are there that he looks like he changed, at least for one game. We shall see for the remainder of the season. I think there's going to be teams that are going to try and test that, and they're going to egg him on. And we shall see if it really, what he learned, and he can apply.
Right. My only pushback on that is Warren Sapp and Darren Woodson or Charles Woodson. I can't remember for the NFL.
Charles Woodson.
Charles Woodson. They had the dream jobs. One's in jail. The other one got fired for paying out to a whore on Super Bowl week. You know. So even though they have these things there, if they don't learn their lesson, they're going to screw those up too. So we'll hope for the best. But talk to us a bit about the timeline in terms of what led. And we don't have to get into it in depth, but I think it's important for the audience to know this isn't just one, two, or three. There's a multiple issue problem here with him. And just to remind the audience.
Yeah, you know, it started back, you know, the year that the Warriors had their 73-win season. I mean, who ever thought that Chicago Bulls 72-win season would ever be supplanted? And it was by the Golden State Warriors of 2016. And so what happened is that Draymond Green got into an minor altercation with LeBron James. LeBron James, I think, kind of stepped over him, you know, while he, you know, Draymond Green fell on the ground and stepped over him. And that's usually like a bad, you know, kind of disrespectful move. And Draymond Green, you know, essentially got up and, you know, took a swipe at his privates. And then from there, he got suspended. And that essentially costed, you know, the Warriors game five. And then also game six, because he got suspended for game six. And then, of course, Andrew Bogut also got hurt, which is part of the reason why they lost, not because of Draymond Green. But anyway, so that was the first one. And then the second time is, you know, highly publicized with Kevin Durant. You know, there was an event where, you know, in 2018-2019 season, you know, there was Draymond Green was, you know, trying to bring the ball up, and Kevin Durant was, you know, clapping for the ball, you know, clapping, give me the ball. And Draymond Green went and took the ball up and proceeded to do a turnover. And then you see on the bench that, you know, there was an altercation there. And that was the beginning of the end of the whole Kevin Durant, you know, tenure with the Golden State Warriors. And again, you can pretty much say, you know, Draymond Green cost that one, because that could have been a multiple, you know, maybe three-peat, four-peat with that, you know, Kevin Durant on the team. But it ran its course, that whole relationship with Kevin Durant and Draymond Green soured at that time. I mean, they're good friends now, but at the time, it just soured. And then, you know, they had he's got a long history of suspensions, you know, with respect to technicals. You know, he's always barking at the refs. So that's part of the reason why you see. And then the most recent ones that you the most recent infractions were this year. And this is what led to the suspension, the indefinite suspension. You had, you know, Rudy Gobert, who, you know, there was an altercation between Jaden McDaniels and Klay Thompson. And then Rudy Gobert went after Klay Thompson. And that's when Draymond Green went after Rudy Gobert, got him in a headlock. It was pretty excessive. I mean, it was a headlock, and you can see Draymond, Rudy Gobert flailing, you know, as if he was, you know, couldn't breathe. And you know, it's a bad look for the NBA. That was rightfully, you know, there's a rightful suspension on that play. So that was probably a little bit more violent, honestly, than the last one. But then, you know, not that much further, a few more games later, you see another altercation between, you know, Draymond Green and Yusuf Nurkic, who's the center for the Phoenix Suns. And then you see Draymond Green reacting violently and swaying his arms and, you know, and essentially hit Yusuf Nurkic right in the nose. And that's what brought us to where we're at today. And now he's back from that 12-game suspension. And now he's back, and his first game was last night. And he already started asserting himself, at least with the team. Essentially called out the team on a press conference, saying that our team, you know, the Golden State Warriors, we're soft. We can't defend. You know, he's trying to send a message to the team that, hey, look, you got to be accountable. You got to, you know, and this is what that's his role. That's what he is. And he's trying to instill that again. He's trying to take over the leadership role, which who he is. And then, you know, and Steph Curry, you know, Steph Curry knows that that's his role. And the coaching staff knows that's his role. And it's just going to see, we're going to find out whether or not he still has that voice with the team.
Right. I agree. It's funny because, you know, when I was reading that on LeBron James, I'm like, oh, he wanted to see if LeBron was king or queen.
Nice.
The junk.
Nice.
Now, for the record, you know, he has been hit for 163 technical fouls, and he's paid about $1.2 million, a little bit over that, in his NBA career. But I think he don't worry about it, Draymond Green fans. He's got a $100 million contract, which he has to stay on this path because every contract has a morals clause. And look, that's a foreign owner. He's from China. This new owner. Those guys, they don't play business. I mean, it's business or get the bleep out of here. It's like, look at the Brooklyn Nets owner, man. He sold off all his players there. Said, screw this, you know. And we're gonna rebuild when he had the dream team there. So be careful, Draymond. You're gonna force that guy into a corner too. Now, his solution was he was supposed to be receive counseling and work with the Warriors and the NBA while suspended and meet certain criteria. So the assumption is he has met that criteria. Long term, do you think – and this is pure speculation, people. There's no proof either or. But, Eddie, does your gut tell you he will learn from this or he's eventually going to get suspended again? Or you don't know. I mean, what's your thoughts?
Well, the track record shows that he's going to get suspended again, right? But Draymond Green's a really smart guy. Don't let, you know, the kind of, I don't want to say the ghetto or the strong personality, the way he is, right? You know, kind of the street life, kind of the way he is. And he grew up in a rough part of Michigan, you know, so don't let that fool you.
Street
guy's
smarts.
A real smart guy. He's street smart.
Yeah,
he's
street
really,
smarts.
Really smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's really, really smart. He's got a high basketball IQ. He can talk. He's got the gift of gab. He wouldn't have that TNT analyst, you know, deal. You know, if he doesn't have the chops to do it. And he's just a smart guy. So, but the thing is, it's emotionally is he intelligent enough to figure this out? And that's what we're going to find out. He's got the smarts as a person. It's the emotional intelligence, which a lot of people say is actually a higher reference to being, intelligent is the emotional EQ is usually the real sign of intelligence. But we shall find out if he's able to do that. I honestly think because he is smart and because, you know, I think this he recognizes that what kind of an impact this will have on the team because he's already somewhat lost them a little bit. He's trying to get it back. And then he has this other deal with TNT. I don't know. I think he'll smarten up and get better Will he get suspended again? Probably. But I don't think it'll be this year. Maybe sometime next year.
Everything Eddie said, people, is the optimistic look. I could say everything with the more negative look, so I'm not going to get into it. All I will say is if he uses the tools Eddie mentioned, tools to work with, yeah, he won't get suspended. Because if you're practicing these tools daily or multiple times a week, it helps you focus on your anger issues. I had anger. Dude, when I was a young boy, I was an emotional fire plug, you know, especially in the Navy. That's why I stopped drinking. Man, I'm that guy who is, I'm He-Man! You know, with a couple of drinks in me.
It doesn't surprise me that you're like that at all. You know, and him the complete opposite of you, man. Complete opposite. It takes a lot to piss me off, but when it happens, watch out, man. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly. And with that, let us move on to our next topic. Well, first of all, we do wish Draymond Green the best. We do. Just for sure. It doesn't matter whether we like him or not. It's bad karma to wish ill on somebody. It's like, you know, you could be in that position. So much success in using these tools of Draymond Green, and let's move on. All right. So Eddie has talked about the new NBA rule regarding load management. I actually found out, Eddie, it's called, and Eddie knew this.
Player participation.
There you go, brother. And you talked about it a couple of times. I don't have a nice analogy to go with it. So tell us what happened.
Well, so the NBA wanted to crack down on, you know, the load management that's been kind of going on for the last 5 years, maybe even longer. And what happened is that kind of started tarnishing the brand of the NBA because a lot of these fans pay a lot of money to go see games. And a lot of the times, whether it be for the visiting team that they're coming to see the opposing players or whether their home team, a lot of times when there's a favorable matchup between, you know, the home team and the away team or vice versa, some of these, the coaches would go ahead and have, you know, some of these players take a seat and take a rest. And what happened is that this has kept happening over and over and over again. And there's a lot of backlash from, you know, fans that the NBA wasn't cracking down on this. So, you know, they had attempted to kind of crack down on this in previous years. But this year, I think, this is the one I think they kind of figured it out. And what it is that, you know, an NBA team, you know, has the way it was initially written, at least the way I understood it initially, was that they were trying to crack down on more on the NBA, you know, all-stars and all-NBA players. You know, that's who these fans want to come and see. And right. I thought that when I saw the rule initially, that's who were they initially targeting. And they still are targeting that because, you know, for these televised games, they definitely are trying to get the best of the best to play at those games, right? So they definitely have cracked down, but I think the player participation tells you that they're also trying to crack down on teams, not necessarily resting their star players, but any players. And this is what happened with the Brooklyn Nets, is because the Brooklyn Nets sat four players in one game, and they were all medically cleared to play, and they just rested all four of these players. And these guys are all rotational pieces. You know, like a Spencer Dinwiddie type. Right, you know, you have a Cam Thomas. You have a Nick Claxton. You know, these guys are not like superstar players in the NBA, but they are like they're four of the better pieces on the Brooklyn Nets. So they cracked down on them and they fined them $100,000. You know, and the first infraction for this, you know, player participation policy is $100,000. The second infraction, so if the Brooklyn Nets were to do this again, it would be $250,000 for that infraction. And then if they did it again the third time, you know, it would essentially be a $1.25 million fine on top of that. Right. So it gets, and then the next one after that is $1 million on top of the previous fine. So it continues to escalate. So, you know, I understand why the NBA did that. They have to protect their brand. And there's a lot of backlash. They don't want people starting not paying for tickets anymore because that's essentially the revenue generation for the league. Of course, TV ratings as well, or TV contracts is also how they make their money. But, you know, if fans are starting to backlash or not watching TV, it's going to affect the brand. So this is why they did it. And, you know, I think they're trying to do the right thing and protect the brand. So
I agree. I mean, It's first of all, for the audience, in the 1990s, the NBA would rest their players on average, their stars, for like 10.6 games within a season. And in the 2000s, it was 23.9. So that was a big massive jump. And the other reason, Eddie talks about it being the play, the fans and all that. Eddie's right. I mean, that's a part of it. The Nets actually showed the NBA how to sell merchandise at games, how to maximize their potential. So games and the NBA followed. The Nets were like the worst team in the league in the 80s or 90s. And they became the number two merchandise and ticket game sales in the league, despite the fact they were losing. If you're a sales rep, you gotta pick up the book, I Can Sell Ice to the Eskimos, or How to Sell Ice to the Eskimos. It was written by the vice president of New Jersey Nets at the time. And he was the one who implemented all this. Great book to read. Okay, so they were fined $100,000. I also think the penalty should start at $1 million. You know, I mean, we're talking ungodly money these leagues make. So this $100,000, that does nothing for me. Why did they target rotation? Oh, and my final point is, what Eddie was saying about the fans is true. But the bottom line is, they care more about their TV ratings. That's where the billion-dollar contracts come. And Eddie's absolutely right. If their star player is not playing that game, and that's why they like the team, that player is going to go to Dr. Phil, you know, or Oprah, or somewhere else to watch some TV, you know. And that was, to me, I have no proof, but to me, that would be their biggest fear. Because that's why they have the in-season tournament. They're trying to stabilize and, if possible, raise these ratings, because they know that contracts in the future are cloudy. This is their last few years of these leagues making killer contracts, because, as you can see, cable's changing. So do you think this will deter the Nets or any other team, only $100,000, or do you think they're just going to say, screw this, I'm going to bite the bullet and rest King James here for the next few games?
No, let's put it this way. I mean, teams can still rest their players. They can't. So as long as they don't do more than one, right? So LeBron James can go ahead and take a rest, even if it's a nationally televised game, although the league would not want him to do that. But, you know, if he needs a rest because, he's an old guy, he's 39 years old, man, right? If he needs a rest, the team can go ahead and do that, right? They just don't want to have LeBron James and Anthony Davis resting on the same exact day, right?
Okay,
Anthony Davis is injured, right? Then that's the deal.
Well, give me one example. So my take is, if LeBron James is rested on Christmas Day and they're playing the Boston Celtics, you know, or some rival, you know, or they're playing Golden State, you know, some rival, and he rests, he wouldn't get suspended. Give me an example of, they're playing on Christmas Day and they rest them and they would be found guilty. What would be triggering that? Meaning he had been rested the day before too, or so? I'm confused as to what actually triggers it.
It's the amount of star players that are resting at the exact same game. That's what triggers it. So in this case, for LeBron James, let's just say that he was getting a rest night day and they gave him the rest night and he's not injured, right? But if Anthony Davis is injured and he sits because he's injured, they don't get fined. But if he's being rested because he is not injured, they have two guys that are rested that are not injured. They get fined. That's how it works.
Can they be fined if it's just one person? It sounds like if it's just one person.
No. No.
Okay, gotcha.
No.
All right.
No. No.
All right, brother. I believe you. It's not my domain. It just seems a little odd, because if it's Christmas Day and they're not playing, I'm the commissioner and LeBron's not playing, I'm calling the Lakers up before tip-off. What the hell is your problem here?
Yeah. Unless he's injured. If he's not injured, they can do that. But LeBron James is a smart guy, man. He's not – if he can play, he's going to play.
Oh, no. And that's just an example. An example of a name people would recognize. That's all. All right, sir. Let us move on. The NBA trade deadline is approaching. February 8th is the deadline. So I asked Eddie about potential players that we may be looking at, and I sent him a bunch of players, and I just, Eddie, give the floor is yours. How do you want to talk about this? You want to hit us up? Who do you think – well, first of all, who are the top names you think could be talked about, and then who are the top names you see actually getting moved?
So here's the deal, is that the way, you know, these NBA trade deadlines, how they operate, is that – usually there are like a handful of teams, you know, in both the East and the West that have disappointed, And, you know, yeah. you know, we're almost at the halfway point of the season. Usually the All-Star break is pretty close to the halfway part of the season, although it's mostly more than halfway the part of the season. But, you know, you look at teams that, at least before the season began, were targeted to be pretty good teams. And for whatever reason, they're just not working out. They're just, you know, they're not blending as they had hoped, right? So, you know, teams that come to mind that fit this criteria that are disappointments to this point and have players that are good on that team that essentially could be offloaded, you know, or traded to another team, to a contending team, in the case of these teams maybe wanting to rebuild or retool for the future, right? So in the East, right, the four teams that come to mind that I think fit this criteria, you know, first, I think, is Toronto Raptors. And they've already made a move already with OG Anunoby going to New York Knicks, you know, in right. exchange for, you know, Precious Achiuwa, and then also I forgot his last name. Anyway, it's one of the six men of the year type guys. Anyway, I'm trying to remember his name, but it's just escaping me right now. But anyway, so Pascal Siakam is actually going to, you know, it was just announced today that there is a deal on the table potentially between the Indiana Pacers and the Toronto Raptors, you know, for, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of draft capital involved in this trade from what I hear that the Indiana Pacers are giving up to get Pascal Siakam. And Indiana is a team that is actually competing, you know, in the for playoff positioning in the East. So that team comes to mind is Toronto. The second team is, Emmanuel Quickley was the guy I was trying to remember that New York had given to Toronto. So,
oh, okay, gotcha.
Emmanuel Quickley and Precious Achiuwa. As, you know, my memory, you know, as you get older, it just, you know, anyway, yeah, senior moments. Anyway, the second team that comes in line in the East is the Chicago Bulls. The Chicago Bulls, you know, have like three really good players on that team that they had initially when they put them all together, you know, and the three players I'm talking about are Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, and then Nikola Vucevic. These three players, of course, Lonzo Ball as well, but he's been hurt. He has an issue with his knee. Right. But they have these four players that all came together, and they thought, wow, this team could be, you know, competing because they have really good players that are all complementary, and they all kind of help each other out. But for whatever reason, this team hasn't really gelled. So these four guys, or three guys, I think, are also guys that could be moved to a contender. And these players are all coveted by a lot of teams in the NBA. So Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, and Nikola Vucevic are big names that I think that could be moved at the deadline. Another team in the East is the Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn Nets, the aforementioned Brooklyn Nets, who just got fined for this, player participation load management rule. They have a player, Mikal Bridges, who they got from the Phoenix Suns, who actually emerged to be like a really, really good player. But I think they're finding out that this guy isn't necessarily a one, you know, a top tier one, you know, guy, the number one guy on a great team. He's more of a complimentary piece. He's probably more of like the second or third best player on a championship team, not initially the first. And he's being paid kind of like almost like a first in Brooklyn. But this guy is very, very highly coveted for multiple reasons because he's a very, very good defender. He's an all-NBA team defensive player. He actually has a pretty good offensive game. So he's another guy that I think that is going to be potentially traded. And then the fourth team in the East that I think comes to mind that has good players that would probably get traded, you know, as Trae Young for the Atlanta Hawks. And then you also have DeJounte Murray, another guard-like in the East. And then Clint Capella is another one that's a center for the Atlanta Hawks. You know, these guys are all kind of high paid players. They're all very, very versatile. They're all difference makers. So all these guys are big names, I think, that, you know, teams that are competing in the East or the West would try and go after. On the West, so I picked four teams in the East. I'm going to pick four teams in the West.
Eddie, one thing I did notice, and you kind of alluded to it. So, for example, it looks like the Hawks, it's money involved in it. Hey, we're not playing so well. Let's get rid of this big contract. And then I noticed that with a lot of these guys, it's like they would keep them, I think, if their contracts weren't so overbloated. It seems like that's a big reason some of these players get moved because, you know, a team can absorb the hit, but they don't want the contract anyway. And if they can get draft picks, I think it's draft picks is what I noticed too. When you mentioned that. And the thing that disappoints me about that is what's the draft pick where you can't get it if we're going to pick up here and it gets defaulted to the next year. There's a term for that.
Protected.
The protected, where they don't necessarily give up. Yeah. You know, so I found this all fascinating, but I want to give props out, because all these players you named, there's a writer called Sam Vecini over at The Athletic, and, has a great article on this for anybody who's looking, and Eddie's mimicking a lot of what he's saying. Just good writer, and it kind of validates what Eddie says too, in the sense of he knows this stuff inside out. So I apologize. Just wanted to get that plug in for Sam.
I'll tell you this right now. I didn't even read any of that stuff, man. I just know this from just watching games and
basketball.
These are guys that I just looked at, and I just did it independent on my own. Without looking at the list of players that you had there, although I can look at the list of players now as we go through it, but I did these all on my own. I just know hoops, man. I know it. So, do you want to keep going, or I can go to the West?
Keep going.
All right. So in the West.
No. Keep going. Go ahead.
In the West, there are four teams that I've identified that have players that I think could be moved. So first, although this team is actually doing better than I think people anticipated, especially most recently, because they're one of the hotter teams in the NBA right now, but they're still a play-in team right now in the West, because the West is so deep. There's a lot of good teams in the West, and not all of them are going to get in the playoffs. So, but this team, the Utah Jazz, has definitely been playing very well as of late, and they actually were a surprise team last year, at least early on in the season, and then they kind of came back down to earth. But they have a team, Lauri Markkanen, who is actually a very, very good player, very, very high coveted guy, because he can shoot. He's a big guy. He's like 7 foot. He came from the Cleveland Cavaliers. At one time, the Cleveland Cavaliers had 3 7-footers on their team in the starting lineup, and he was one of them.
Wow.
So he's now at the Utah Jazz, and he can shoot. He's a very good player. And then, so he's one of the guys that I think could be moved, as well as Jordan Clarkson. Jordan Clarkson is one of these six-man type of players, you know, kind of a streaky type of shooter, instant offense kind of guy. He's a guy that, you know, I think could be moved to a contender as well. The other team that comes out, other than the Utah Jazz, there's 3 other teams I'll mention in the West, the Los Angeles Lakers. This is a surprising development, because the Los Angeles Lakers, you know, when they did all these moves in the offseason, I'm like, oh my God, this team is ready to compete, because they're so deep. They were deep. I mean, they are still very deep. But for whatever reason, they're just not meshing very well, right? I don't know why. I don't know what it is. There's been a lot of speculation that there's locker room issues between the coach and a few of the players, namely Austin Reeves, who is just one of the players I'm going to name here. There was a lot of talk about him and Darvin Ham not necessarily seeing eye to eye, creating some issues, you know, in the locker room. So he's one I think that could be targeted to move. Another guy that's on that team that, you know, I think he's revitalized his career, honestly, is D'Angelo Russell. You know, I think early on in his career, when he was with the Lakers, he had a bad name for himself because he kind of tattled on one of his players, you know, about some kind of issue with the wife. I don't know exactly what happened, exactly the details, but it has something to do with that. And, you know, so he was kind of like looked at as a tattletale. And I think he revitalized his career when he went to the Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn Nets is when he actually revitalized his career. And then, you know, he was with the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Warriors, and he came back to the Lakers. But he's a high-priced guy. He actually has a skill set. I think they can get something for him, you know, if they move him. And the last two pieces that I'll mention on the Lakers is Christian Wood as well as Torian Prince. These guys are more they're not star players. They're more rotational pieces, but they're valuable rotational pieces for teams that are wanting to compete for a title or playoff positioning. The third team in the West that I'll bring up, I brought up Utah Lakers. The third team are my Golden State Warriors. It has been very, very evident that there's a lot of turmoil in that locker room. And unfortunately, I think that we're going to see this team get busted up. And I think it's been pretty clear that, you know, at least the beat writers here locally are all indicating that the Warriors are going to be very active at the trade deadline. And everybody's on the table except for Steph Curry. So that's a lot of speculation has breeded from that. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they move, you know, off. You know, Chris Paul is one guy, but he's injured. Right. He's got a very attractive contract, so I think that's why he might be moved. Draymond Green, you know, he has all these issues right now. I mean, you know, but, you know, if Steph Curry wants Draymond Green in the team, he's going to stay on the team. And Steph Curry and Draymond Green are very, very, very close. And, you know, and like I said before, Draymond Green is a vital piece to that team. But, you know, management might have gotten tired of his antics, and they might want to put him on the trading block. Klay Thompson is another name that has come up. You know, he doesn't have a contract. He has an expiring contract. He's due up for renewal this year. You know, he could be a rental for a team that's trying to compete. And, you know, the Lakers are, you know, the Lakers are a team that's linked to both the Draymond Green and Klay Thompson, you know, potentially getting them. So there could be something in the works, there in the horizon, a three-team deal that could involve those guys. And the piece that's the much maligned, unfortunately, and we don't know exactly what happened with this guy, with Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins, for whatever reason, last year had some issues. We don't know exactly what happened, but some family issue had happened. There was a lot of speculation of what it could be. It could be it had to do with his kids, had to do with his dad. We don't know. His dad used to be an NBA player, Mitchell Wiggins, for the Minnesota Timberwolves back in the day. So we don't know. We don't know what's going on, but there's something. He's not necessarily 100% right. We know that Jordan Poole is a very good friend of his, and Jordan Poole's no longer on the team. We don't know if there's some kind of, you know, fallout from that. You know, maybe he's one of these kind of quiet cerebral types, and maybe he just didn't fall in line with what management, you know, what management's decision to keep Draymond Green and shift out Jordan Poole. Maybe he just got pissed off. We don't know. There's a lot of speculation about what happened with Andrew Wiggins, but, you know, 2 years ago, that guy was a beast. He's the second best player on that team in the championship game against Boston, the championship series. He was the second best player, and he probably would have got MVP if it wasn't for Steph Curry. So,
I remember that now.
Very well.
The world knew who Wiggins was that series because he played so absolutely. Fast.
He was an all-star that year too. Yeah. He's fallen big time for, we don't know exactly what's happened, but there's something mentally, and it could be just a change of scenery that's needed for the guy, but it's very, very evident that they're probably going to move him. So if I were a bet man, I would say he's the one that's probably going to get moved. He's got I think he's got a contract that's appealing as well, along with Chris Paul. And I think they can get something for those two guys. Not a difference maker, but someone that's probably going to be a better complementary piece than those two guys on the team currently. And the last one I'll mention in the West are the Memphis Grizzlies. I mean, this is a team that I picked early on in the preseason rankings. I thought these guys were going to be like maybe the sixth or seventh seed. And right now, they're not even they're worse than the Warriors right now. And they, even though they beat the Warriors last night, you know, without a lot of their star players, they're just a team that's a mess. We don't know what's going on. So John Morant is somebody, you know, that could be moved. You don't know. We don't know. I mean, they can get a lot for that guy, a lot of draft capital to rebuild that team for the future. And they have Steven Adams. Steven Adams is a valuable piece that a lot of teams covet. And I think he could be moved too, to get some, you know, trade capital or some draft capital for the future. So those are the teams I'm targeting. And those are the players I would say are the most, you know, the possibility of them moving is high. All of the guys.
Right. You know, if Ja Morant could go to the Bulls, to the Celtics, to the Lakers, or to the Knicks, he'd feel right at home.
Difference
with his
maker.
Gun.
Difference
with
maker.
His gun.
The thing is, he's out for the season, though. He had surgery, season-ending surgery, so he's out for the season. But he still could be traded. I mean, he's still got value for the future, so. We'll see.
No, I get you. I'm just like, what a moron with the gun hole incident, you know?
Yeah.
And you have this great career in front of you, and that's how you treat it. All right, Eddie, we will revisit this next week, analyze trades that have gone down, and how that affects other trades. Because, you know, people always forget, when one player's traded, that creates a domino effect sometimes and triggers other moves, whether a team goes or our A player's gone, and let's make the move for the B player. So it's always interesting. The final question before we move on, do you see, you talked about potential trades, but how serious do you think trades, I mean, like the NFL, you'll get a couple of NFL trade deadline, and then no moves ever get made. In the NBA, I mean, at all these players, you expect some of them to actually get moved, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, Pascal Siakam is already about to be moved, you know, for the Indiana Pacers. He's going to go to the Indiana Pacers. I mean, that's what's been talked about. We don't know exactly for what or for what players, but he's definitely going to be on the table. It's going to be a very active, you know, trade deadline, for sure. My prediction would be at least – 10 deals are done, at least like 10 wow. noteworthy deals I think are done. Yeah,
man, that's about it. Like 5 to 8 years worth of NFL trade deadlines. You know, they don't make a lot of move. Of course, the salary cap is much more. The NBA does not have a salary cap. They have a salary cap in name. They got an exemption for literally everything, you know. And some of the exemptions are good. Some of them are just clearly to circumvent the salary cap. And I can't blame the NBA. they're trying. I mean, you got 6 to 10 million viewers for an NBA final versus 80 million for the Super Bowl on a bad year. Okay, speaking of Super Bowl, Eddie, thank you for that update. We will visit that next week again. But let's move on to the National Football League and Wild Card Weekend. Eddie and I are going to talk about some of the games. First of all, the Baltimore Ravens and the San Francisco 49ers were on bye. They will the Ravens will be hosting the Texans at home, and Eddie and Ravens are the number one seed. The Texans are the number four seed. Eddie, tell us who's your team, the Niners, hosting.
They're hosting the Green Bay Packers, who just lambasted the same team that Niners lambasted weeks ago in the Dallas Cowboys. That was kind of embarrassing.
Embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't fault McCarthy on this one. And for the record, the Packers are the number seven seed, the last seed. No number seven seed has ever beaten a number two seed until this year. And you know what, Eddie? The final 2 weeks of the season, I reminded people, the Cowboys are not invincible at home. That record was unofficially broken by the Lions and the refs gifted them the win. And the Packers proved me correct. Yeah, but we're going to talk about that game shortly. I want to first talk about the Houston. Man, Houston destroyed Cleveland. You know, what were your thoughts, Eddie, about that game? Look, Houston rolled out 356 offensive yards. Stroud's playing like a veteran, not like a rookie. What were your thoughts of that game?
I mean, I think that was the C.J. Stroud coming out party. I mean, geez, that guy played awesome. I mean, poised. I mean, this guy doesn't look like a rookie. I mean, I would have never thought coming out of Ohio State this guy would be this good, honestly. Because Ohio State doesn't really have a good reputation of having great quarterbacks that come into the NFL. So the fact that this guy is doing what he's doing in his first year, taking a team that had Deshaun Watson previously, you know, was also a player who was actually pretty good, you know, coming out of, the championship game, right? You know, in the college football, and he came on the Texans and, you know, took him pretty far initially. I think brought him in the playoffs at least 1 year, and then all hell broke loose with all the massage stuff. And now he's no longer there. He's now, you know, he went up against, you know, his old team in Deshaun Watson playing for the Cleveland, you know, Browns, and he wasn't even playing, right? He could have played against his old team. That would have been a nice story, but that didn't happen, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, D'Amico Ryans has got this team like believing. I mean, that's the one thing that came out is that this team is playing hard. CJ Stroud is playing awesome. You got Nico Collins. Who is that guy as a wide receiver? And all of a sudden that guy's looking like a stud and a star. So, then you have Devin Singletary, who's the running back, who's doing very well. So I mean, unbelievable. This team and their defense, two touchdowns. They had two scoring touchdowns. You know, Joe Flacco, Joe Skinny, I'd call him. You know, Flacco in Espanol, right, is skinny.
Yeah, yeah.
So he threw two pick sixes in that team, and, you know, amazing. I'm impressed with this Texans team. They're doing way better than anybody anticipated, and you got to give credit where credit's due. I mean, D'Amico Ryans has done a very good job there.
He's easily the coach of the year. Yeah, you're right. C.J. Stroud's playing like a veteran, not a rookie. My real take on Stroud will come next year after there's enough film and all that. It's kind of like Jalen Hurts had a monster season last year.
Yep.
People were like, oh, man, he's a superstar. I go, he's on his way, but I'd like to see it. Not, I don't judge him based off of 1 year because the next season there's a lot of film on them and teams can anticipate. And I'm not saying Stroud's going to come back down to earth, but that's when I make my final judgment. But he's playing some hell of a good football. And the stats are deceiving. He was 16 of 21 for 274 yards and 3 TDs. He was efficient. And winning is not about superstar stats. It's about winning. And he did everything he needed to do. And you're right, the two pick sixes. It was just a great game for the Texans. And before we move on, I'll say this. I mentioned to you, Eddie, plenty of times during the season. Look, the Browns have an elite team that is inconsistent. They play up and down to their opponents. And I told you, I mean, I have said it specifically, but I know I wrote it in my article multiple times. This will come back to haunt him once they start playing better teams. And Myles Garrett, the long shot MVP candidate, He disappeared. I think he had like two quarterback pressures. That was it. There was one play where he was made the fool. Well, not his fault. You know, just CJ Stroud just does a great move. And there's Myles Garrett rolling over air, you know, hitting the ground. So they've got to become more consistent, the Browns. And I'm wondering how they're going to deal with Joe Flacco. Is there any intent to bring him back? And what does it say about Deshaun Watson? You get a 38-year-old quarterback playing on pennies on the dollar, outplay statistically what Deshaun Watson has done in 2 years. This is why I don't care for guaranteed contracts in any sport. It's not that I'm against the players. It's about winning. And when you're stuck with the loser, it's going to kill you salary cap-wise, you know, or bad contract. But let's move on. Did you send Texas?
I was going to tell you, the Cleveland Browns are a team to watch out for in the future, though, for sure. They're going to be a team to watch out for because that defense is legit. They're going to have Nick Chubb back, hopefully. You know, they'll figure out their quarterback position, you know, situation. You know, that team they scare me. So I think that team's going to be very good.
I don't know about Nick Chubb. That was a devastating injury, and it wasn't his
fault. It was.
So let's pray that he comes back. I hate players who are young, haven't hit that big contract, and I truly feel for the running backs. So I hope he does come back. You know, yep. And you're right. They are a young team. So we'll see. We'll see. Now, the Texans, again, they face the number one seed, the Baltimore Ravens, away. It's a great time for them to shine on that game for the simple fact that Lamar Jackson has his own playoff demons to overcome. So let's hope for a good game. But I think it's going to be a chess game, Eddie. D'Amico Ryan's defensive strategy. How will he shut down Lamar Jackson? If I'm the Texans, I'm saying I want to see Lamar go mobile. Because if he's going mobile, he's not throwing. And with our way we pass rush, we seal the lanes, we limit his mobility, just like the Niners did to the Eagles. However, saying that, and doing it are two different things. What's your take on the upcoming matchup against the Ravens from the Texans standpoint before we move on?
I think the matchup to watch out, honestly, it's not the Texans D and how they contain, you know, the Lamar Jackson. I think it's the Baltimore Ravens D and how they can confuse and create issues for CJ Stroud, which is what they did with Brock Purdy, you know, a few weeks ago. Right. I mean, the defense of the Ravens, I think the number one rated defense, if you know the stats, but they're up there. You know, they can confuse a player like a CJ Stroud who hasn't seen many schemes on the defensive end. And maybe D'Amico Ryan can prep him for that because he's a defensive oriented type of coach. But that's the matchup to see is, you know, can CJ Stroud solve the puzzle that is the Baltimore Ravens deep? We shall see. That's, to me, the matchup to watch.
Yeah, my assumption is he's going to struggle, but he may not, but that's my assumption. So, to me, it's a game the Texans are going to be – we got to hang around, and then we got to let CJ work his deep ball magic. And but to hang around, they're going to have to figure out how to stop Lamar, and that's my take on that one. All righty. And my title was that was Whole Houston Destroys Cleveland. You know, the next one is the Bills are too much for the Steelers. Look, I'm proud of the fact that I had the Bills as my number three team in my power rankings the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season, and they validated me. I think this was just a game where the Bills are just the better team. You know, they beat the Bills are 12-6 now. The Steelers, they beat the Steelers 31-17, and the offense, they played up to their standard stuff. But the rushing attack did very well, Eddie. The Bills' offense had 368 total yards. They averaged about 374. So the offense played up to their level in extremely cold weather. The football's heavier, drier, slipperier hands. When you get hit, it's like being punched. But it was the rushing attack. Remember, Eddie, how I talked earlier in the season? Yep. How the Bills started winning because they committed to a rushing attack? And that they had 179 rushing yards. Their average is about 133. The downside is that Josh Allen this week contributed 74 rushing yards, and that's always a big risk for injury. But this is the playoffs. This is right where you want him to sell out that way. So he's also an upside X factor. What are your thoughts about the Bills and the Steelers?
There's no surprise. The Bills were a better team. I mean, the Steelers made it a game for a little while. I mean, you got to give it to them. They have a lot of moxie, especially for not having, you know, their quarterback, you know, at least the starter. who's been out, you know, for a few weeks now. And, you know, this guy, Mason Rudolph, has actually played pretty well. And, you know, they had, you know, some issues with their, you know, offensive coordinator. They changed that. They got better. You know, so I got to give it to the Steelers. They had no business being in that game that close, but they find a way to do it because Mike Tomlin just knows how to coach that team up. You know, you got to give props to Mike Tomlin. I don't think he's ever had a losing season, and that's amazing. Nope. Considering that this easily could have been the season that he had it. Easily.
He's lucky he found Mason Rudolph, and maybe he'll give him a little respect and not cut him and let him battle for the job, because if Tomlin's been a screw-up in anything, it's his quarterback selections after Roethlisberger. Yeah. You know. Now, defensively, the Bills did lose three players, and that's a concern moving forward. They faced the Chiefs at home. The Chiefs are the number 3 seed. The Bills are the number 2 seed. And I'm pretty proud of the Bills having that number 2 seed, because they were the only team not in the playoffs that were ranked in most people's power rankings in the top 10. And they clinched not only the playoff spot, but the number 2 seed. And this is the first game that the Chiefs will be playing away in the Patrick Mahomes era. What's your take? What's your take on that? In that, do you think the home field advantage is enough to take out the Chiefs?
You know what? This game is going to be really close, in my opinion. I don't think, you know, I think Pat Mahomes is still a problem to deal with for any defense, regardless if he has, you know, doesn't have a wide receiver to throw to. The Rashee Rice has emerged as his go-to guy, at least from a wide receiver standpoint, other than, you know, Travis Kelce. Isaiah Pacheco, who's also a good running, I mean, he's emerged as a very good running back. You know, in the past, you know, the Chiefs, they were a high scoring team, you know, that teams had to play catch up, right, you know, with them in order to compete. And now they're not that team anymore. So now they're a different team. They're a run first type of team that has a very, very good defense that's carried them, honestly, this year. And that defense is for real. So that's why I'm saying it's going to be a lot closer game than meets the eye. I think a lot of people, the betting folks will probably say Buffalo Bills, you know, because, you know, they're at home, they're higher seeded. They've been playing very, very well lately, but man, you can't count out Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid anytime. You know, he has some time to figure out a game plan. And I think that this game's going to be tough. The conditions, of course, are going to come into play. We shall see. But in my opinion, it's going to be close.
But
I think Buffalo had.
And it's funny, they're two different teams now, meaning they're dependent on their defense.
Both run first, guys.
All right. Regarding the Steelers, Eddie's right. They were valiant. They were down 14-0 and 21-7 at halftime, and yet they still managed to make it a game and make it interesting at the end. All right. Detroit wins revenge game against the Rams. These Los Angeles Rams, that is. The record, they're 13-5. You know, they beat – I thought, once again, they were playing a little disappointing to me. I don't think the game should have been as close, but the Rams made it close. And so my disappointment with the Lions is they don't seem to know how to finish games or put teams down. And again, they won this squeaker, but they can't afford to make some of the mistakes. They only scored 3 points in the second half, Eddie. So they've got to play more consistent football. They got to play 60 minutes of freaking football. You know, Everybody, well, they're this, they're that, they're tough, they're this. Yeah, you're right. But they never give you 60 minutes of football. And that's why I still think they're a year away. But it was the first playoff home game that they won, or the first playoff home game in 32 years, and they won. Lights out in the first half, shut down in the second. Jared Goff gets some revenge. To me, it's like, yeah, you got a little bit of revenge, but Stafford has a ring. You don't. You know, so it really wasn't much revenge. But he was efficient. But more importantly, he played error-free. No turnovers. Yes. The Lions tend to lose or are going to overtime, have these ungodly close games because of the turnover battle. So that's what I saw out of it. The Rams almost put off the upset. And I'm not going to blame this game on anybody because it wasn't anybody's fault in terms of the Rams losing. But they lost because of bad coaching decision with Sean McVay. He failed to use his three timeouts with a minute left, and then the clock ran out on them. And in the second half, he chose to punt, hoping to get the ball back, and the Lions ran out the clock. Now, I just said they lost against Sean McVay. They did. But I don't blame him for the we're going to punt and get the ball back. I don't blame him for that decision. There was enough time to make that happen. It just didn't go his way. The not using any three timeouts with a minute left, I saw that game. So I don't really blame him too much because they were pinned deep in their territory. He could have called the timeouts, get things rolling. He was just hoping to get the locker room talk, get him rejuvenated, and come back out. So even though they lost because of Sean McVay's coaching decisions, I don't blame him at the same time. What's your take on this, Eddie, this game?
You know, I thought it was, in my opinion, the game of the weekend. It was obviously, I think, the closest fought battle. That I think it just, you know, there's a good storyline with Matthew Stafford coming back against his old team, you know, and Jared Goff, of course, going against his old team that he went to the Super Bowl with. I think the storyline was great, and I think it set up for a great game. And, you know, the Detroit Lions, yeah, as you know, conservative as they were in the second half, and of course, you know, as you just alluded to, some of these these calls done by Sean McVay, you know, it just made for a good game. And you know, the better team won. You know, the Detroit Lions are a team to watch out for. They're just learning how to win. And you know, Dan Campbell's got these guys playing hard. You got to give it to him, man. When his first press conference, he was talking about eating knees and eating elbows and all this stuff. Man, it sounded like Mike Singletary back in the day when
he was the Niners. Oh, yeah.
Oh, poor man. But, yeah, but so the thing bad. Is that, you know, yeah. But, you know, he's a, you know, the team loves this guy, you know, and they play hard for him. And, you know, they're talented bunch. You got to give it to them. They have great positional players, key positional players, great running backs. And Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be a stud. David Montgomery's great. You have Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's emerged as one of the top wide receivers in the league. And, you know, so you got to give it to him. And then they have this Sam LaPorta, who out of, you know, he's a rookie tight end coming out of Iowa, and he's a stud. So this team is definitely going to be an issue, and they have a great offensive line. I think they just need to learn how to win, and they're going to be a problem for years.
Right. Their only downside, Eddie, is they got one of the league's worst secondary. So, I think that's going to burn them eventually when they play one of these high power teams. And the final comment I'm going to make, and I'm going to separate Eddie from this, is my personal comment because I'm involved in politics. Jemele Hill, who hates everything white, said that Dan Campbell got this job because he was. We are still waiting for comment from her regarding Dan Campbell taking the Lions, getting the Lions to their first playoff home game in 30 some odd years and winning. We have not heard from the Jemele Hill camp. Yeah, I'm just tired of the racism. You know, it's like Todd Bowles. They just showed a clip of him asking about him and oh my God, I'm drawing a head scratcher. The only other black coach in the league. Why am I drawing a blank here, Eddie?
Who's the other one?
Yeah, Mike Tomlin. He had there asking, hey, do you guys talk this? He goes, yeah, we're friends and all. He goes, but I'm friends with a lot of white coaches, too. We don't look at it that way. It's always the media trying to generate this. Because in sports, you don't care. It's like, dude, I mean, the Giants love Jason Sehorn. They didn't care that he played cornerback and was white. That camaraderie. Overcomes. Right. And that's why they love Dan Campbell, because he's a former player and he uses that to help bond with the team, you know.
Is it Mike McDaniel also biracial, by the way?
He is biracial. It was great, Eddie. I'll tell a quick story and then we'll move on next game. So I follow politics, and since Colin Kaepernick has become very tribal, that's why I hate the quarterback discussions, because if one's white, one's black, it boils down to half the audience talking about the skin color and why one's screwed over or why one should have it, etc. But yes, so when Mike McDaniel's got that, now Mike McDaniel's is biracial. He is. Mm-hmm. He looks about as black as I look Latino. So, of course, Deadspin, one of the most racist or one of the most bigoted websites out there. Remember that kid who had the black makeup on one side that had the non-makeup on the other? You know how they do the two-tone colors when they go to the game and they dress up as a – you know, he said that was racist. That kid's racist. Blah, blah, blah. Turns out the kid is Native American, and it wasn't racist. But that's Deadspin. They do that. So they came out with an article. Yeah, another damn white offensive whiz kid coordinator gets a head coaching job. And somebody tweeted. They wrote an article all on that, and somebody said – aren't journalists supposed to do research before writing an article? You do know he's part black, you know, but he looks so like the Deadspin writer assumed. And I play that card all the time. I have, Eddie, true story, and I'm sure, well, it probably hasn't happened to you because you look Latino. I've been amongst Latinos, and you know how grandmas are? You know, they got grandkids. Oye, mira ese muchachito, allí un guapito, para tu nieta, you know. So like, look at that kid over there, he's a good-looking kid, you know, with their grandkid, you know, or your cousin or something. I just, one time I'm listening, and I just talked in Spanish. Thank you very much. And you should have seen these 60, 70-some-odd-year-old women jump back 10 feet. You know, they're so they're more embarrassed than I heard every word they said. You know, so it happens. But my whole issue was you're supposed to be a journalist. You're supposed to research it. That validated and proved what the state of journalism is today. Crap. All right. Let us move on over to the Kansas City Chiefs dominate the Miami Dolphins. Look, Eddie, the weather was a big factor for this. The Dolphins were fins out of their water, their element. And what I've been talking about the last 3 weeks is people ignore it when you win or when you're ranked high. And statistically, they had high rankings that were going lower and lower as the season progressed. But people never look at the 3 or 4 game trends. They look at the season rankings. But the injuries were taking their toll. And I said, look, two things are going to happen if they don't win home field advantage. One, they're going to have to go travel to a cold city. And two, these injuries are going to catch up to them because they're not going to be playing sub-500 teams. And that's exactly what happened. And their secondary was a patchwork. The Chiefs posted 409 total yards, 355 is their average. So even on that terrible weather, you know, Rasheed Rice broke out for 130 yards, 1 touchdown on 12 targets. And impressive, as you were talking about Isaiah Pacheco earlier, they generated 147 rushing yards, 107 is their average per game. And like you said, the defense took control. The Dolphins averaged 261 offensive yards per game, only 188. One of their core strengths that people forget about is their rushing attack. Everybody's passing, passing, passing. But the Dolphins were averaging 132 yards per game, 76. What's your take on this game? To me, it was the weather. It was the Fins were just completely out of their element, out of their water. Eddie, I don't know. Have you ever played a contact sport in the cold? I have. Never officially just got right around the military.
Yep.
When you get hit, it hurts harder than if it's warm weather. Yeah, you know, and it lingers, and it's more stinging. And I got that with the cold. I think and the Chiefs were a better team. They beat them 21-14 last time. But I think they could not handle the cold. And I think that's what this game broke down to. Your take.
I think that, you know, the better team won. I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs, they're the defending Super Bowl champs. And, yeah, they're not the exact same team as they were last year. They are still formidable, especially in the playoffs and especially at home. You know, they're just a different team now. They're more a run first team. And then, you know, use Patrick Mahomes' legs when he needs it and his arm when he can see an opening and the guy doesn't drop the ball. They're a team to beat. So, I mean, there's still an issue for any team to reckon with. And the Miami Dolphins, they're still a 1 to 2 years away, maybe another player or two away from being a serious contender.
Right.
You know, they have the capabilities. They have the speed. They're probably the fastest team in the NFL. They just need to figure out, you know, another year under their arms to figure out how to, you know, game plan accordingly with what they have. You know, they've proven that they're a playoff team for years to come. Now they just need to add a few more pieces and shore up probably their defense a little bit more. Their defense actually played a lot better than people, you know, thought. They actually did pretty decent. I just think they kind of deviate away from the running game a little bit too much sometimes. I think they become very pass happy because of what they have, and you know, Jalen Waddle as well as Tyreek Hill. So you know, they're a team just like the Detroit Lions, learning how to win, and they're going to be formidable for years to come, in my opinion.
Yeah, and they shut down Tyreek Hill too. You know, in fact, I have it here somewhere. Oh, the defensive line also had no explosiveness to them, the Dolphins. I noted that watching the game, and I believe that's the code. You know, and the NFL, again, once again, is a game of attrition. I talk about that every time we talk football, and they didn't have the depth. Their rushing attack disappeared, as I said, and Tyreek Hill was held in check. 562, 1 touchdown, 8 targets. For Tyreek Hill, that's being held in check. And this was the third straight loss where the offense could not keep up with the opposing team's offense. and it was her fewest points all season. You know, I will say this about the Dolphins. I'm a Tua fan. I'm a fan of people who overcome a lot. And those head injuries, all the negative talk, the Ryan Clark, you're fat, this earlier in the season, that. So I'm a Tua supporter. But that said, I'm also a realist. He does not have the arm strength to go deep with accuracy. His receivers consistently have to slow up. So I believe to take the next step, they're going to have to upgrade that. Does that mean Tua doesn't belong in the NFL? No, he can play in this league. But that his arm strength is not tailored for that specific offense. So
I agree.
I don't think they're going to ever go to the big dance until they upgrade that. And the final comment on the Chiefs, notice that we talked about their their rushing yards, their defense. That kind of like how we talked about the Bills, like you were saying earlier. They've kind of reversed their strengths, and they had to because they were both struggling midseason. You know, the Bills struggled early middle season. The Chiefs struggled middle late season there, you know, but they both have recovered. And with Pacheco playing now because he was hurt for a couple games, it's going to be a fun game to watch. And I think, Eddie, it's going to be a game dictated by a few big plays. And in those big plays, it's going to be one or two big turnovers or something, you know, something odd that creates a game-changing momentum. I'm looking forward to that game. All right.
Maybe a ref call, right? Maybe the refs get involved again, right?
And to defend Dan Campbell, poor guy. He's been playing not against just opposing teams with the refs. You know, you're right. Yeah, bad ref call. You know, oh my God. All right, let's go. We got two more games to discuss. We're way over, but I don't care. Let's discuss these two games because they were blowouts all season long. We're gonna first the first one's gonna be the Dallas Cowboys are embarrassed by the Green Bay Packers. And all season long, we talked about the Niners, Eagles, and Cowboys as being the elite of the elites. And the Cowboys crumbled against the number 2 seed going down against the number 7 seed. The Packers have the youngest roster in the NFL. Jordan Love's growth is not always shown statistically. I watch every game every week. I may not watch the whole game from beginning to end, but I watch enough. And I saw this guy's development. I remember all the errors he was making in the first Monday night game against the Detroit Lions where he lost. And then I saw those errors eventually going away and the chemistry developing. So I am shocked at how quickly he's developed. But I am not shocked at his development. You know, he spread the ball around, Eddie, the 8 players. He methodically ran their version of the West Coast offense. It's about distribution, about hitting the players in stride. Since week 12, he's led the league in passer rating, and he uses legs as they should. I love mobile quarterbacks, but they always get hurt, and they never live up to the potential because people don't understand the mobile quarterback of the NFL. Once a mobile quarterback starts to learn how to use his legs like Russell Wilson and Pat Mahomes does to buy time and run when they have to. Jalen Hurts is also learning how to do that. They become monsters. So to see Jordan Love, he's not a rushing quarterback anyway. People assume because he's black, he's a rushing quarterback. But he's able to use his feet properly and mobile. I'm loving this guy, and I've been digressing too much on him already. But the real key to this team is the rushing attack. The rushing attack has been on fire. They're averaging 114 yards for the season. They ran up 148 yards in the last 4 games because his stats were in single digits. His last 4 games, running back Aaron Jones has been averaging 21 touches but 119 yards and no touchdowns. He had 3 touchdowns this last game and no touchdowns the other 4. So it's kind of distorts the average, but it doesn't matter. They can score through the air. They needed him to control the clock and short yardage. And that's why these drives are lasting longer. The defense is young and dumb. They give up yards and points, but it was stout this week, Eddie. They ripped into the Cowboys. You know, the Cowboys put up phenomenal stats, but it doesn't matter. They were 48, and the score was 48-16, and then they just got into the throat, got to throw, and they started connecting.
Right.
And there's 3 minutes left, and they're 2 scores down, so theoretically they had a shot, even though it was a long shot. So they came on. But those, that data, those points are deceiving because He had two interceptions. Dak Prescott, they were in the first half when they really needed to get the offense rolling. C.D. Lamb had no impact until the fourth quarter when it didn't matter. The defense collapsed. Former head coach for the Atlanta Falcons.
Dan Quinn.
He was being talked. Yeah, Dan Quinn. They were talking about him, potential head coaching candidate. I think that door was shut with his performance. 510 offensive yards allowed. They were outscored 25-21 in the second half. So the Cowboys recovered offensively. The defense did not. I gave out a lot of information. I apologize. We're running short on time, so I wanted to give a lot of key points. Anything stick out from you with this game, Eddie?
No, they just got their butts kicked, man. You can just tell by the flow of the game that Dallas was in trouble. You can just tell. Yeah. The Packers looked way more confident. And Jordan Love, man, that kid is going to be good. That guy's got a rocket of an arm. He just flings it like, you know, Michael Vick does. Like, effortless and just zips. He's amazing, man. So, you know, the Niners are going to have an interesting matchup this weekend against this team because – you know, this team matches up well against the Niners from a, you know, run first type of offense. And, you know, Matt LaFleur knows, you know, Kyle Shanahan, and Kyle Shanahan knows Matt LaFleur. It's going to be interesting to see what happens here. But Dallas has got their butts kicked. Yeah, they got their butts kicked. And, you know, they got outcoached. Matt LaFleur outcoached Mike McCarthy. Plain and simple. And it was very evident to me, from the outset. And, you know, and once, you know, the Cowboys, you know, once it starts steamrolling in the wrong direction, they can't recover. They just don't know how.
Right.
You know? So that's my take.
No, I have a slightly different take. I don't think Mike McCarthy was outcoached. I think the Cowboys in the first half just completely failed to execute. And like you said, once they started making mistakes, Dak Prescott couldn't overcome. And my take is, look, I have always told you this during these podcasts this year, the Cowboys are soft. They need to get mentally tough. They always pucker up in the playoffs because of the pressure, I believe. And because of this game, and based on how well he played in the regular season, I don't know if Dak Prescott can ever take the Cowboys to the promised land. I think you have a different mindset in the playoffs versus the regular season. And you need a quarterback who can toughen up, who can say, yeah, the playoffs are mine. And he's not that. Do you think and as far as Jordan Love, all the accolades about him coming out were that, dude, this guy can do what Rodgers and Favre does, and he can do it better. In terms of the talent. And the other thing is he was forced to sit. Look, you have no pressure on you now, you know, to learn to throw you in before you are ready.
Right.
And I think those 3 years really helped them learning from that. Do you think the Green Bay Pack – I don't think they can beat – I think the Steve Wilks will be able to create some schemes. They've got the two edge rushers. I don't think they have enough to overtake the Niners. Any given Sunday, I know, but I just think looking at the numbers, the players, the schemes, I just don't think they have enough to overtake, especially if the rushing attack gets shut down. I think that's going to have to be key to slowing and stopping Jordan Love, is taking the rushing attack away from him and saying, you got to beat us to the air, because I don't know if they can. Your take.
Well, you know, Eric Armstead, who is the defensive tackle on the Niners, has been injured for quite some time now, and he's coming back. And he's one of their main run stoppers. So the fact that he's playing in this game, I think bodes well for the Niners being able to contain Aaron Jones and, you know, whoever else they throw back out there, Patrick Taylor. I think A.J. Dillon, I think, is hurt. I'm not sure. But, you know, I think that guy's Eric Armstead is key to be able to plug the middle up. And but, you know, Aaron Jones is going to get his. He's a talented running back. He's a fast guy. In space, he's an issue. So, but you know, the Niners have a lot of linebacker talent that I think can contain them. So, it remains, you know, any given Sunday, but I think the Niners are definitely, you know, from top to bottom, the more talented team. But talent alone isn't going to win it in the NFL. You have to show up and play hard. And I think that the Niners are hungry to now that the Eagles are out, they're hungry to go to the Super Bowl, and I think they're gonna take out the
Packers, I think so too.
Probably I think by like 14 points. That's my call.
I think so too. Look, AJ Dillon doesn't always get his. That's a problem. But he's steamrolling right now and getting his. So it's a matter of this team is on a roll. They have momentum. but it's not like they're this dominant beast. And I think the Niners should easily stop him. And I agree. Now, final question. I already said defensive coordinator Dan Campbell. Oh my God, Eddie, help me out here.
Dan Quinn.
I think the door may have shut on him for head coaching jobs, but 12 wins the last three seasons. I don't think this loss is on Mike McCarthy. I think it's on the defense. I don't think Mike McCarthy should be fired. I think the problem is you have a quarterback that can't get over the hump, and that's just the way it is. And same thing with Tony Romo. I think their last two quarterbacks just could only take him so far. But I think he will get fired here. What's your take?
You talking about Dan Quinn or Mike McCarthy or both?
Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, I think he's gone. I mean, you know, you have Bill Belichick, you know, out there, and Jerry Jones is going to try and make a splash with Bill Belichick coming to the Cowboys. Guarantee it. I guarantee you he's going to go after him.
No, I believe it, but I don't know why. What have I said all season long about Belichick without Brady?
Yeah, he's not that great of a coach without Brady.
He's a loser. And I don't say it in a derogatory way. It's a fact. He is a loser. So why do you want to bring a loser without the quarterback that brought him 7 rings or however many rings they got? You know, why? Because you want to make a splash, so you're putting your ego and your PR ahead of actually what you need to do with this team. You know, I think all Jerry Jones is validating is why the Cowboys keep losing since the Jimmy Johnson era. Yeah.
Well, there's the problem, man. Jerry Jones is the GM/owner there, and he runs everything. So he's going to do it. Yeah. I guarantee it.
I agree.
He's going to do it.
Yeah. All right. The Buccaneers shocked the Eagles, and it's not even close. I was hoping for a good game. I was hoping that the Bucs could upset him for two reasons. I love the comeback story of Baker Mayfield. Right now, if there's a comeback player of the year, that's him. And I think Todd Bowles is one of the nicest coaches in the league, a true human being, a gentleman's gentleman, who has played a physical game, who understands the savageness of the sport. So he's able to he's just a nice guy. I like him. Everything I've read and seen from him. So it was because I think he was gone if they hadn't made the playoffs, and I think he would have been gone had they been blown out. So I was glad to see them win. Look, the team looked sharp early in the season. The Bucks, remember, they were like 3-0. Then reality check hit them, and then they were looking like a JV team 1 week. A high school team that makes the playoffs, but you don't know what you're getting, you know. But they play with meanness, they play with toughness, and they play with perseverance in this game. They went after it. And more importantly, they didn't look soft. They looked like they wanted it more than the Eagles. They posted 426 offensive yards. Now, that said, it's not like, the Eagles defense was playing top-tier football, but the Bucs had no rushing attack. 90 yards per game is their season average, and that's horrible. They scrounged up almost 120 yards. The defense limited Jalen Hurts. There were a couple of good passes he got away. But look, my wife and I were watching the game, and even she said with this one play, she goes, "Do they know how to tackle?" Now, if my wife says that.
Oh, yeah, they're missing all kinds of tackles, the Eagles.
And I always talk about fundamental football because they don't have many pad days anymore. So there's a lot of missed tackles. And it was blatant. Look, the Eagles looked like they quit. And they really looked like they weren't there. It looked like once the Bucs, "Oh, man, they hit me in the mouth, Dad. I don't want to get hit in the mouth," and they quit. You know, offensively, 276 total yards the Eagles had, their average in season, 350. The rushing game disappeared. 42 rushing yards. Their season average is 124. They lost the time of possession battle. 34 minutes for the Bucs, 26 minutes for the Eagles. Everything went wrong. 30% third down efficiency. What's your take on this game?
You know, I think you hit the nail on the head with the Eagles. They look like they just look like a team that was defeated when they arrived. And that tells me that there's something going on there in the locker room for sure. I don't know exactly if it was A.J. Brown. Don't know if it's just the hangover from, you know, not being able to get lambasted by the freaking the Niners. And even though the fan base in Philadelphia, they're just relentless. So who knows? Maybe this stuff is just hanging over their head. They feel like crap. They just look like a defeated team. And like you said, they got punched in the mouth and they just never recovered. And Tampa Bay took it to them. You got to give it to them. They were the physical team. They took it to them. And the fact that, you know, I knew it was over when they got, when that little tush push got stopped. You know, I've only seen that thing get stopped once. They stopped
I've never seen it get stopped.
I've only seen it. That was the only time I ever seen it get stopped. I think it was only the second time in the entire season it got stopped. And I think they're the team that did it both times. So I don't know, man. I mean, that's when you know. When that didn't work, you're like, they're done.
You know, it's kind of like they went. It's kind of like they went through the motions. Oh, we got the whatever they call that play, you know, and the
just push,
or whatever.
Yeah,
and it was funny. It wasn't funny, but it was like, man, you're watching Jalen Hurts slowly getting turned sideways, you know, as they're pushing back. Now it took a little out at the end there, but you know, they got away with one. But still, you are correct. That was a defining moment because it was the invincible tush push, and you could tell even the announcers were stunned. They're like, "Oh my god!"
Yes.
You know. So look, I think both coordinators are gone. I think Nick Sirianni's job is safe for one more year.
I think so.
The real issue is A.J. Brown in the locker room. He helped instigate a cancerous locker room, a cancerous atmosphere that negated the team from coming together because he pitted the players against the coaching staff, the play calling, all that. I think he was just an envious, bitter guy. He started out red hot. You know, I mean, he was on after his first few games, he was on his way to a 2,000-yard season. Then it started collapsing. And I think his ego was just pissed off. He wasn't getting the ball, wasn't getting his numbers, wasn't getting any of the interviews he wanted. And when you have a player like that, him, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, when you get players like that, Santonio Holmes, Plaxico Burress, you know, there's players like that. That to me was 60% of their locker room problem. But you can't give up on A.J. Brown. He's one of the league's elite receivers. So they've got some real questions. What would Eddie Aparicio tell them if you were the consultant? I'm here to fix you. If you want to live and compete for Super Bowls, follow me or come with me. What would you say?
The A.J. Browns of the world are going to exist. It kind of comes with the territory from being a wide receiver. You're just a diva, right? So you just have to have a strong enough locker room to be able to contain that and deal with it. I mean, the original diva, in my opinion, is probably Terrell Owens. Terrell Owens is the original diva, right? And then you probably say Randy Moss as well, but I would say TTO is probably even more so than anybody. It's the worst. But you had strong people in that locker room that were able to kind of keep them in check, and that's what I think Philadelphia Eagles, you know, they need that. I mean, they have, you know, guys on the defensive end that are pretty strong. You know, Fletcher Cox is a pretty strong personality. I think Jason Kelsey, another one who's pretty strong-minded, you know. They can contain that guy. Let him, I mean, if he's going to, you know, he's going to do what he's going to do, but they just need to be able to contain it. And they're not going to be able to control him. They're going to be, hopefully we'll be able to contain him. But it just comes with the territory. It's just the way they are.
I agree. Look, Baltimore Ravens, all they had was an elite defense. They had an inconsistent offense, but because of strength, desire, perseverance, and this is my locker room, and we are a football team, and we are a family. Us, the quarterback, I would assume he protected Dilfer, too, because he loves Dilfer.
You're talking about Ray Lewis now, right?
Ray Lewis. Yeah, I apologize. Ray Lewis. So I mean, there aren't many Ray Lewis's around, but back in the 70s, 80s, you always had that veteran leader, and we got a bunch of prima donnas now in the league, and I think a lot of teams like Buffalo, they've been struggling to get to the Super Bowl, and I think because they didn't have that strong leadership, that one person. And I think the Eagles will falter, will continue to fail until they bring somebody in who isn't afraid to get into Brown's face and go, "Look, little man, you know, receiver compared to linebackers, defensive tackles. Like, look, little man, shut the bleep up. This isn't your locker room. We don't need this crap." And when that happens, the player may grumble and all that, but they'll walk away and they'll realize, "I've been put in my place. I need to become a team player." They don't have that. They're not going to get that with two new coordinators. They're going to have to bring a player in just for that purpose. And I don't know if I don't know who's out there, but they have to find it. And with that, Eddie, I think we've covered the NFL. Yeah, I think we got some good games coming back. This is a weekly process. We're going to talk trade again next week. And another great episode. Next week, we're going to talk about more football, you know, divisional round of the playoffs. We're going to see who has been traded, who hasn't been traded. Oh, real quick, Eddie, 1 minute. We'll wait for next week for that. Well, I wanted to talk to Eddie about the Djokovic and Carmelo Anthony fake feud, because it seems to be only coming from Carmelo being upset that that Djokovic wears his number. So I want to talk a little bit about that, because it has more to do with egos and, like, what have you actually done for the team to be making those type of statements?
Yeah, let's push it out for next week, man. Let's push it out for next week, man.
Yeah. Until then, everybody. Head on over to grumblingsmedia.com. You will find this podcast. You will find me talking more about Jemele Hill and my Fired Up podcast, which is our political podcast. We have our libertarian podcast. And obviously, we have clips galore. So do not forget, grumblingsmedia.com. On YouTube, we are under the profile of Grumblings Media, as well as on Rumble. You can also listen to the show on Spotify, Apple, Google, and Pandora. And with that, Eddie and I, we bid you adieu. Until next time, my friends, have a wonderful week.
Take care, guys.